Today's shir is Masechta Shavuos, Daf Mem Gimel. We will begin on Daf Mem Beis, Mem Beis on the bottom line. The Mishnah had taught us that Shem Echinim Ein Nishba, Shem Echinim doesn't need to make a Shavua. Asked the Rambam immediately, from where do we know this halacha? Says, Ma'ad Tan Rabbanan, the Braisa says, the Pasuk says, and the Braisa explains, Kitn Ishal Reyu Klal, Kesav Kalim Prat, Lishmar Chazav Klal. So this again is a situation of a klal prat to klal, which, as we learned numerous times in Amasechta, Eyat Adon Elkein Prat, what the prat accomplishes is the prat limits where this halacha is applicable. Ma prat meforish tovim tatzal gufa mamon. If we look at all the things that are mentioned in this prat, they are all something that is movable and has intrinsic value. Av kol davar mitatel gufa mamon, that's when there's a chiyuv shvua. Yotzka kos, so therefore it excludes real estate, shem mitatel, that are not movable. Yotzu avodim are excluded because throughout halacha, avodim have the same halacha as karaka. Yotzu shtaris, shabbi shem mitatelin, and we talk about loan documents that even though they are certainly movable, however, ain gufa mamon, they don't have intrinsic value. Hegdish, and the reason Hegdish doesn't have the halacha, because the Torah says re'eyu ksev. When all these halachas stated, the Torah says the word re'eyu, Hegdish is not re'eyu. The Mishnah continued to teach us that nois asacha ain a mishalim, that the nois asacha will not be chayiv for what he normally is responsible for by karka, by vodim shtaras v'kadoshes. How do we know so? Again, says the Gemara, the Tanur Rabbanan, the Braisa teaches us, Kitne shel reyu klal, chamor ashor aseh is a prat, klal b'chob ahem alishma is a chov of a klal. So this becomes, again, another situation of klal prat to klal. And therefore, the Gemara doesn't even say this again for a third time, but it has to be something which is davar matatl, something which is movable, for gufa mamon, and has intrinsic value, which is not the case, obviously, by all these various items that we just have discussed, in the Gemara. Continues the Gemara. Remeya taught us in the Mishnah, the yesh dvarim shem kekarka, there are such situations with the things that are karka, but they're not treated like karka, that the halachas that we've been discussing that apply to karka will not apply to these things. And the Mishnah explained that if somebody claims to someone else, I gave you 10 grapevines, and he says only 5, Remeya says that this is an example of a moedim amixis. And the Chum say, as would seem to be the simple pshat, the kal mechub lekarka, anything that's connected to the ground, kekarka nenu, is treated like karka. Mechlal, is that mean to say, the Ramei Sover, the kal mechub lekarka, in the karka, that something that's connected to the ground is not considered like karka? So ask the Gemara, Adam Ifki, if that's the basis of Ramei's opinion, that this exclusion that was saying about karka is not applicable, if that's the case, Adam Ifki, instead of speaking about this case that we just constructed of Tunis, about 10 and 5 grapevines, that how many Lifki, but Surukas, we don't have to talk about grapevines that are full of grapes. We could have just said that he claims you owe me 10 grapevines, and he says that no, I only owe you 5, which would be example of Maidim Mixus. Because of this, says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yosef Ben Bechnina, Hocha Ba'an Novim, I'm just the Batsa Kamifki. We're speaking about a situation where the grapes on these trees are ready to be cut. And therefore, it's a whole new situation. Remeya holds that since they're ready to be cut, so that Allah views them as if they're already cut. Rabbanan Savri, whereas the opinion of the Rabbanan is, until they're actually cut, loy kibitzuris damim, they're not considered disconnected, and therefore they're still considered. They're still considered as like karka. So as the Rishonim discuss this halacha has a many different applications. One application is, as we often discuss in our shiurim, somebody's property is meshubed to a loan, but not as metaltlin. That means that a bal chayiv is entitled to collect his debt from any real estate that was owned by the loiva at the time of the loan, even if it's no longer by the loiva, there was already a mortgage on those property. But that doesn't apply to metaltlin. The Gemara Masechta Ksubos, Daf Nun Amud Beis, teaches us that if somebody sold grape vines full of ripe grapes, his bal chayiv is not entitled to collect the grapes because they're regarded as metaltlin. Says the Rach, that it seems that Gemara is following the opinion of Rameya, that we're learning here that kol ha'im des lebatza kibatza dormi, that anything that's ready to be cut, the halacha views as cut, and that's why those grapes are viewed as metaltlin. However, many Rishonim have a difficulty accepting that approach, because they say that the halacha actually follows the Chachamim. So why in the Gemara Masechta Ksubos does it seem that the Gemara is following the opinion of Rav Meir, that kol ha'im des lebatza kibatza dormi? It answers the Rimigash that the halacha of the Chachamim, when they say the ripe grapes, they are not considered like detached, it's only when they're not in the possession of the owner. Our Gemara is speaking in a case where somebody was a shomer over these grape wines. In such a case, that the Chachamim will hold that although the grapes are ready and fit to be cut, they're not considered as if they're cut. However, the Chachamim will agree that you can't collect grape vines with ripe grapes from the party who bought them from his debt, from the person who owed the money, because they're considered metatlin since the owner was ready to harvest them. Another answer which the Ritva says, which is a very fundamental answer, Ritva says that although we have here machloikus remei de chamim of kalayim des lipsa kibatzadami, if it's already considered cut, that's only in a situation where they're not overripe. And there's nothing detrimental happening to those grapes as long as they're still connected to the vine. But if there will be a situation where they're so overripe that they're being on the tree actually is detrimental to them, then there's no machloikus. And everybody will agree under those circumstances that kol ha'im des lebatzer, anything that's ready to be cut is considered kibitzur dami, it's considered to be cut. However, there are a number of points that need to be made. One is that even though Rameyer is teaching us the kol ha'im des lebatzer kibatzer dami, that doesn't mean that in all situations he will say so. As far as Hilchos Shabbos is concerned, for example, the Paiskim say that even if something is at that point where it's ready to be cut, it's even overripe, if somebody actually goes and cuts such grapes on Shabbos or such fruit or vegetables or whatever, there everybody will agree that it's an act of Hilchos Shabbos. Another point that they make is, let's say we know that on Sukkos we have to take the aluminum. What will be the halacha if you have the aluminum that's still connected to the grape, to the earth, but they're ripe, they're ready to be cut? And somebody shakes those aluminum in such a fashion, will it be considered as if they're connected still, and therefore you're not yotzei the mitzvah? Or will we say, since they're ready to be cut, they look like they're cut? Here the Paiskim suggest that of course you won't be mekayim the mitzvah of daluminim. Why won't you be mekayim? Because at the end of the day, there's a tzura of the mitzvah. There's a way that the mitzvah has to be performed. And when it's performed, when the dalam minim are still connected to the ground, as much as there's aloha of kalayim lebatzah kibatzah dami, that won't be considered disconnected. And if somebody does take the dalam minim in such a fashion, he won't be considered as if he fulfilled the mitzvah. We learned in the Mishnah, Einish Baum al Davish Bemidush El al Davish Bemidush Mishkan. When it comes to speak about a mitzvah of a mixer situation, people have to be able to identify the claims very clearly. Amar Abaya, so says the Gemara, when does this mean? So the Mishnah spoke about, for example, what somebody said that I lent you this much, and you say, well, it was that much, but it's not identifiable how much I let you have, how much I lent you, and how much you owe me. That's not a mitzvah mixus. However, the Mishnah said that if somebody gave somebody else the contents of a warehouse, and he says that you gave me up to the roof, and he says you gave me up to the window, those are identifiable. That's considered an identifiable situation where mitzvah mixus will be applicable. To which says Abaya, Omer Abaya lo shana el da amalei bayistam. He didn't speak about which house he's speaking about. So since he's not able to identify which house he's speaking about, it's not an identifiable claim. Avol Amalei, if he said to him, Bayezem Molei, so he did identify the house, there, Yudiyat HaNesei, it's considered as if it's an identifiable claim, because we know which house and we know how much could fit into the house. Amalei Rava, says Rava, if the halacha is that as soon as you could identify the house, that's enough to make it an identifiable claim. So ask the Gemara, why did the Mishnah, when it wanted to give us an example of an identifiable claim, use the example of the Taiveya, the Malva saying, I gave it to you till the top, and he said, I gave it to the window. Adetani b'seif v'zeh amar aziz, v'zeh amar achaloiv chayiv, lifting v'lisim b'didah, the Mishnah could have taught us even a bigger chiddush, b'medvar memurim, when is it not considered a case of moedim mixes? B'bayis mole, when he just said the word bayis mole, without identifying which house. Avol bayis mole, if you're able to identify the house, then you'll be chayiv, and you don't have to speak about this case specifically about the window and the top, etc. Elam Rava la'olam and achayv at shiyana b'dovah shabamida shabamishkul shabaminyan. The claim has to be much more detailed. And it has to be a claim where he could exactly claim how much I gave you. And then the person who's responding, and therefore just saying a house is inadequate. And says the Gemara, Tanya Kavosei the Rava, the Brisa supports Rava's understanding of this halacha, because somebody says, Kotvu libiyotcha, you owe me a kor of tvuah. I don't owe you anything. Klum. Because that's an example of kaifer hakol. He's completely denying the claim. Or if somebody says menara gedola yesh libiyotcha, you have a large menara mine, and you respond ein lecha biyadi el menara ketanam, even though it seems that should be moed v'mixus. I said a big menara. You responded a small menorah, potter. Because a menorah gedol and a menorah ketana, that's the way Rashi explains, are considered two different types of objects. And as we've been learning from the beginning of the perek, when they're talking about the claim and the counterclaim are about two different types of objects, there's no question that the halacha is that there's no moedim and mixes. However, azayir gedayla yesh libiyotcha. Similarly, if somebody says you have a large belt of mine, and you respond ein lachal azayir gatana, I only have a small belt, potter. Again, it's different objects. Avil in a case where somebody said kotva yesh libiyotcha, you're holding a core of my grain. The halacha amen. The response is, I'm only holding a lesach, which is a chatzi korb. That's my de mixus in chayiv shvuos. Or, vayse menorah bas esra litrim yesh libiyotcha, that the menorah of mine, which you are holding, weighs 10 litrim, and you respond, Ein lecha b'yadi el bas chamesh litrim, that it's weighs 5 litrim, b'chayiv. Klal shadavar, the Braisa summarizes, lo'el man chayiv, at she'enu b'dovi shebemida, v'shebemishkel shebeminyin, v'yod le'bidovi shebemishkel shebeminyin. And as we've said in previous shiurim, it is not the style necessarily of a Mishnah Braisa to add a statement of summary unless there's something to learn from that statement. And the Klal Shadavah, and therefore the question is, what is the Braisa trying to accomplish with this summary statement? Lasuyamai, Laev Lasuyay, the Baizem Mole, that if I just identified the house, it's and use and that will not be considered enough of a identifiable claim, which is exactly what Rava said. The Chasam Sof explains that what is the basis of the machloikis of Abaya and Rava. So he says, according to Abaya, we learn from the words Salma and Kesef. And the Pasuk is talking about its identifiable piece of garment, its identifiable amount of money. Rava, however, learns the Pasuk from Ki Huzeh. The words Ki Huzeh are much more detailed, says the Chasam Sof in explaining Rava's opinion, than the word Salma or Kesef. And therefore the Machloikis, says the Chasam Sof, is what is the word that we should focus on? Should we focus on the word Salma or Kesef, or should we focus on the word Ki Huzeh? Or Mashna, ask the Gemara, why is this any different, Menayr G'dayla, Menayr K'tana? Why, in a case where he said a Menayr G'dayla, Menayr K'tana, it's not considered might have been mixes, as we explained, because mashatana loy haidaloy, mashadaloy latana, a big menorah and small menorah, two different types of menorahs. So ask the Gemara if that's the way you're going to explain. So iachi bas eser and bas chamish, if you have two different menorahs, one is a 10 liter menorah, weighs 10 liter, and one weighs 5 liter, it's two different menorahs. And mashatana loy haidaloy, mashatana loy tana loy, and why would the Brises say that's a case of might have been mixes? Answers the Gemara, Amar Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak, Hacha b'menorah shechul yisaskinin. We're talking about a menorah that's made up of parts, the kamaydele minei. And since it's just a question of menorah made up parts, and you could add parts, and you could take off pieces, but it's all one menorah. Says the Gemara, if that's the way we're going to understand the case of the menorah, so ask the Gemara, so then the case of the belt should also be a case of Maida Mixis. Apparently, they used to have belts that were made out of pieces, and you could add pieces or take off pieces. Elo, the life of Lektani. We don't talk about a belt in terms of pieces. So that's why that can't be the way we're going to understand the belt case. So ask the Gemara Nami. The shachoyus like tani, then the menorah should not be explained as a menorah made of pieces. Elam Rabba Ramamo, shani menorah. When we speak about a menorah of different weights, the reason when we have a menorah of different weights are not considered two different types of menorahs, because if you have a menorah that weighs 10 liter, that menorah you could scrape down and take off from its weight, and make that very menorah, so it's not, that's why it's not considered a different type of menorah. But menorah of different sizes, that you can't make a big menorah into small, a small menorah into big, that's why they consider two different types of things. Hamavas chaver al mashkin. If somebody gives a mashkin, gives security, the loiva gives a mashkin, gives something for security to the malva, and now over the mashkin, the malva loses the mashkin. So there's no question that if the mashkin, that the malva becomes lost, it is the response, if the mashkin gets lost, it's the responsibility of the malva. Moreover, if the mashkin was equal in value then to the loan, then you don't have to pay back the loan. If the mashkin was worth more than the loan was worth, so then the malva will have to pay the difference to the loiver. That seems to be the basic premise of our Mishnah. The Mishnah only goes further to say what will be the halacha if there's a dispute about the value of the loan versus the value of the mashkin. So again, hamavas chaver al mashkin. If somebody gives, the loiver gives a mashkin to the malva, and therefore, as we're going to learn the Gemara, the malva becomes a shayma sachar. We'll explain in the Gemara why, and therefore he's responsible if something happens to it. But now we have a dispute. The amalai sella have a sicha alav. I lent you a sella. A sella is 4 denarim. V'shekel hayishava. And the mashkin was worth only 2 denarim, a shekel. So you still owe me 2 denarim. V'hala aymer. And the loiva says, loi. Ela selva halvisani alav. You indeed lent me 4 denarim. And the mashkin sella hayishava. It was also worth a sella. And therefore, according to that, I owe you nothing. The halacha is potter. The loiva is potter. And this is an example of a kaifer akol, because according to the loiva's claim, he owes the malva nothing. Selva v'sichala. If the malva says to the loiva, it was worth 4 denarim, v'shekel yishava, and it's worth, and the I lent you 4 denarim, 1 selam, and the value of the mashkin was 2 denarim. V'alo omer, and the loiva responds, loi ela sela v'sani lov, yes, you lent me a sela 4 denarim, however, shlosh denarim yishava. So now we have a dispute. The loiva says, I owe you. But according to the loiva, he's saying, I owe you 1 dinar, because the mashkin was worth 3 denarim. And the malva says, no, you owe me 2 denarim, because the mashkin was worth only 2 denarim. So this will be a case of maidim amixis, because he says you owe me 2 denarim. I say that I owe you 1 dinar, and therefore the halacha is that that would be the Mishnah saying that that is considered a case of maidim amixis. The Ramban points out that even though the loiva is going to have to swear to support his claim, but the malva is a shomer, and as we learned in previous shiurim, the malva sometimes has to make a shvua, and according to that, the malva here too will have to make a shvua. It seems that the Ramban learns that they both have to make shvuas. Sela v'semila, the loiva says to the malva, "You lent me a selva v'shtayim hayishava, and the mashkin was worth 2 selas. So that means you owe me a sela. V'loy amaloy ela k'sela v'sichalav. I lent you a sela." And the smashkin sella yeshava. So according to the malva, he owes nothing. And therefore, since he owes nothing, it's a kaifer akolis potter. But in a case where the loiva says sella v'sani lov, you lent me a sella, and I claim that the mashkin was worth shtayim yeshava, I claim that the mashkin was worth 2 sellas. V'loy amaloy kele sella v'sichalach, I lent you a sella v'chamishim dinarim yeshava, and the mashkin was worth 5 dinarim. So according to that, you claim I owe you 4 denarim, and I say I owe you 3 denarim. This will be a case of maidim amixis. I'll have to swear. Umi nishba, who is the one that has to swear? And the Gemara is going to focus on this line of the Gemara. Misha b'kadim etzlai, the one that's holding on to the mashkin. Why, says the Mishnah? Because if the malva perhaps is still holding on to the mashkin, and perhaps everything he's saying is really just a setup. And if we're going to make the loiva swear first, so what's going to happen is the loiva will swear, and he'll say whatever he swears, and then the malva, maybe the loiva will make his shua, and then the malva will take out the pekadin, and the loiva will have become a clear liar. And therefore, because of that, the malva should be the one to swear. So, of course, this is a very difficult line of Gemara. Because we're concerned that the loiva is dishonest, that's why we make the malva swear. So, the Rishonim ask this question, and they answer because the making the loiva swear when there's a possibility that the malva still has the mashkin. And the way I understand what the Rishonim are saying is when the malva makes a shvua in this case, there's really two parts to a shvua. One part of his shvua is that he swears that I don't have the mashkin anymore. And then he swears, what is the value of the mashkin? If the malva is lying, and he still has the mashkin, then when we make the loiva swear, we made the loiva swear for no reason at all, because the malva still has the mashkin. The only way, and therefore the halacha tells us that the malva should make his shvua first. Says the Gemara, ahai. So the Mishnah, as we just discussed, focused on a situation where who should make the shvua first. And the Mishnah, given the svara that maybe the malva still has the mashkin, so therefore he should swear. Ask the Gemara, what case is the Gemara Mishnah referring to? Ilam Sefer, it's talking about where the loiva says, you owe me 4 dinarim. And the malva says, I only owe you 3 dinarim. So therefore, as we explain, that makes the malva into the Maida B'mixas. And of course the halacha is, typically the shvua gabe malva. The malva is the Maida B'mixas. Since the malva is the Maida B'mixas, he should be the one that has to swear. I'm a Shmuel, and because of this question, Shmuel said that this line of the Mishnah was referencing the Reisha. The Kenam Rav Chiya Barav, a Reisha, the Kenam Rav Yochanan, a Reisha. So ask the Gemara, what case of the Reisha? My Reisha, says the Gemara, if it's the first case of the Reisha, where the Malva says, you owe me, because the Mashkin was only equal half of the loan, and the Loiva says, I don't owe you anything, so the Mishnah said that that's not a Moedav Mixus, and since there's no Moedav Mixus there, there's no Chiv Shvua. It must be speaking about the second case of the Reisha. The second case in the first part of the Mishnah, of the Mishnah, where the Malva says, Selva v'seichalof, I lent you a seller 4 dinarim, v'shekel ha'yishava, and I say that the Mashkin was worth 2 dinarim. V'loyam aloy k'selev v'sonilof, I agree you lent me a seller, but my claim is, shloisha dinarim ha'yishava, that this Mashkin was worth 3 dinarim, and therefore I only owe you 1 dinar. Shvua, so this is a case of Maida B'mixas. He says, the Malva says you owe me 2 dinarim, and the Loiva says I owe you 1 dinarim. So since he's the Maida B'mixas, so therefore the Shvua Gaba Loivihi. The Loiva is the one that ought to make the Shvua. However, because of the consideration that was brought up at the end of the Mishnah, where the Malva still may be holding on to the Mashkin, therefore Vishakura Baran Miloiva, the Rabbanan took the chi of shvu away from the loiva, the shijua malva, and put it and placed it on the malva. However, says the Gemara, Ashtadam Ravashi, now that we learned from Ravashi, Masecht, Bav Metziah, Daf, Lamed Hei, Amud Aleph, the Kaimelon Zendish, B'Shenu B'Shusai, that the malva has to swear on all these types of claims, where the malva has to swear that he doesn't have it anymore. The Zendish, B'Kama Yeshava, and the loiva swears how much it's worth, Hach Kamer. So now the Mishnah is much easier to understand. Mi nishbetchila, the Mishnah is asking a question, who should be the first to make a shvua? And the Mishnah says, because they both have a chiyuv shvua. One has a chiyuv shvua that he doesn't have it anymore. One has a chiyuv shvua what it's worth. So the first one to make the shvua is Misha B'Kadon Atzlei, the one that's saying that he... the one that that might still have the mashkin, before we need to be concerned, Shemi Yishavazeh, maybe if the loiva swears first, and then the malva says, you know what, I really did have it all along, Yoytzeh Alos Bekadon, and he'll take the Bekadon, and then it turns out what the loiva said is untrue, and because of that, we created a situation where the loiva sweared falsely. In order to avoid that, the malva should make the shua first. Somebody lent somebody else 1,000 zuz. Mashkalei kata de magla, and the loiva gave the malva a very inexpensive object as security, the handle of a sickle. Of it kata de magla, and now the malva lost that. over Alpha Zuze, then he lost the entire amount of the loan. Even though the amount of the security, the value of the security, was so much less than the value of the loiva, since the malva accepted this as a mashkin, his accepting this as the mashkin is saying that until I am able to give you back the mashkin, you don't have to pay me anything. And according to Rashi's understanding of this Gemara, it doesn't have to be spoken out. The Gemara is saying that it's understood that when the loiva gives the malva a mashkin, he's as if he's saying to him explicitly that he's not ready to pay back until you return the mashkin. Other Rishonim disagree. And other Rishonim say that it has to be spoken out. That's the opinion of the Rabbeinu Tam, that only when this was clearly spoken out will the loiva not have to pay back until the mashkin is given back. Avatatik sasi. But if the malva got two things as a mashkin, it got two handles of the malva loy, then even if the malva lost one of them, then we don't say that each one of them is corresponds to half the loan. And if you lost one, you don't have to get back. He won't have to pay you back half. Well, we say that if he took two, they're both considered one mashkin, and therefore we say that it's considered one mashkin, and as long as part of the mashkin is here and can be returned to the loiva, give it back, and the rest, the loiva will have to pay you the balance. Rav Nachman Amar, afilu tiksasi, if you gave him two mashkins, we say that each mashkin corresponds to half the loan. Ibet chavra, if the malva lost one mashkin, ibet chavra shmeya, he lost half the loan. Avad idach, avad kule, he loses the entire loan. Aval katav naska. But if the two objects that were given for the mashkin are two different types of objects, one is a kata, is this handle, and one is a naska, it's a piece of silver, loy. There, everybody is going to agree that we don't say this. And there, why? So Rashi explains, because a kanta is an object. So yes, of course, every object has a value, but the value is not always easily identified, because there's also other considerations when we look at an object. Maybe this object, which is not an expensive object, has a lot of meaning to me. But when we speak about a naska, which is a piece of silver, a piece of silver has a value. There's no sentimental attachment to the value. And therefore, the halacha is that the value, that naska is only attributed to whatever it's worth compared to the loan. There are different pshatim in the Rishonim, but this way Rashi learns the Gemara. The da'am afil katav naska, even if these are the two objects that were given for the mashkin, the handle and the piece of silver, we say each mashkin corresponds to half the loan. And therefore, ibet hanaska ovet palga, ibet kata ovet kule. Says the Gemara, we learned in our Mishnah, where somebody says, seller of sicha alav, we all agreed that the amount of the loan was a seller for dinner, v'shela yeshava, and the malva says that the mashkin was worth a shekel, 2 dinarim, v'loi aymer, and the loiva says, loy, el kesela v'sich alof, the loan was for 4 dinarim asela, but the mashkin, not like you, the malva, saying, says the loiva, the mashkin was only worth 2 dinarim, a shekel, I claim shlosha dinarim ayishava, chayiv. But ask the Gemara, according to the way we're learning now, that when somebody gets a mashkin, when the malva receives a mashkin, if he can't return the mashkin, then he doesn't have to pay him anything. So what's pshat in the Mishnah with all of this back and forth? Once the malva is unable to return the mashkin, the loiva doesn't have to give back anything. Answers the Gemara, Masnisen b'deparish. Our Mishnah is speaking in a case where there was no misunderstanding. The Malva clearly indicated to the Loiva, yes, you're giving me this mashkin, you're giving me the security, but the security doesn't mean that until I give it back to you, you won't have to pay me anything. You won't. If I lose it, you'll be able to deduct the value of the mashkin, but not anymore. And Shmuel speaking about a case, the Loi Parish, where it wasn't spoken out, and Shmuel saying in a case where it wasn't spoken out, there the understanding is that unless the Malva is able to return the entire mashkin, the Loiva has to give back nothing. And therefore the Mishnah and Shmuel are talking about very different cases.